I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you?
Hello, mate. I'm just looking at pictures of Roland, our favourite host, on Instagram. He does have a collection Roman. Of fine cars, and he seems to spend a lot of time with some beauty products. But my God, like, he looks like a lady, Chris.
He lives a decadent lifestyle. Really, for those does. Of you wondering who Roland is, you may have missed our recent podcast talking about snack bar hostess club culture in Japan, where you spend lots of money to have somebody talk to you while you drink and smoke. And the king of hosts, the best host in Tokyo, is King Roland.
He looks like Michael Jackson, like a 26. Blonde Michael Jackson.
He does, yeah. If you look up this Roland chap, ladies and gentlemen, on YouTube, just go host, I think it's host TV, Roland, or just type Roland in anywhere, Roland Host Club, and you'll see him. He's a very eccentric-looking guy. He's 26 years old, but he's had a lot of plastic surgery done, and he has very long blonde hair. And he looks like quite a character. I'm sure he's lovely, but he is a very smart man because he makes $88,000 on just some single evenings alone. So he knows what he's doing. The plastic surgery's paid off. And the flirtatious banter.
Yeah.
I'd love to meet him. As I said in the time we talked about it, I'd love to actually have a chat with him and see how he can be worth like $88,000 in one evening.
Little spooky
Must
boy.
Be bloody good at talking.
I mean,
what do you even talk about? To get that kind of money.
I mean, I don't know. Politics, love, life. Wow. Unbelievable scenes.
Well, on average, like a Japanese businesswoman going into these host club places would pay something like $500 to $600 for an evening at a host club, just sitting there talking to guys like Roland. And they get their money from commission, from getting drinks. So Roland would sort of say, oh, you know, we're having great fun here. It'd be even better if we did it with some champagne, some Bollinger or something. What if you buy that? That would be great, wouldn't it? And then you'd go, yeah, sure, Roland. Hand over your credit card. And next minute you're drinking champagne with King Roland.
Horrible King Roland. What a controlling man.
King Roland.
What a disgusting man.
How could the conversation be that good to justify that kind of expenditure? I don't know.
I don't
get it. And that's why I fail. I'll never be a good host. But today we are talking about your questions. We have got the fax machine filled to the brim, as always, with your wonderful emails and stories, guys. Keep them coming. AbroadInJapanPodcast@gmail.com. If you have a question about anything or a story of something that happened to you in Japan, send them in and we'll probably read it out. And our first one, what is it, Pete? What have we got?
We've got a Chris. It's a Chris versus Chris situation.
Good name.
There's no two ways about it. Hey guys, I previously spent a semester studying at Rutsumeikan University in Kyoto, and at that time my speaking level was N5 beginner level, which sounds very advanced for the word beginner, so I had no idea how to go about getting a haircut while I was there. My solution was to just get my haircut really short before leaving America, and subsequently looking vaguely homeless by the time I left Japan. How was your first haircut in Japan, Chris, and is there any specific etiquette I should know about? Thanks, love the show, Chris.
And I don't think you've seen it, Pete. I actually collected this email, but this Chris chap has attached two photos, one of him before and after his semester in Japan.
Oh, nice.
He did indeed go with short hair and came back with relatively long hair, certainly not on the level of Roland and his decadent long hair. But yeah, to call himself homeless, vaguely homeless, was a stretch of the imagination. I think he looks rather handsome.
No.
But I can relate because I had this problem. Of course, I went to Japan with basically no knowledge of Japanese, certainly no knowledge of the terminology required to discuss having a haircut. And I think I put it off for the longest time, for like 3 or 4 months, just because I was scared. I remember going up to the barber shop, looking in through the window and just being like, yeah, I'll do it next year. And like just doing that on and off for weeks on end.
Yeah. But
I went in and I think I took a photo with someone. I took a photo of a celebrity. I don't know. I can't remember who it was.
Right.
It might have been someone from One Direction, because though I despise One Direction,
they do have
good hair. Mm. And I think I pointed at one of their heads and was like, "This man." And then it happened. And then they just cut my hair like that. But I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
Even now, I'm not sure what the best terminology is on how to describe how to get a haircut. What I do is I just go to Natsuki's place. And I still do the same thing. I basically take a photo, take it to Natsuki's wife, and I'd say, "Asami, this person's hair, please." And then she does it. So just do that. Just take a photo, and you don't need to know any Japanese.
Is your hair a little bit like a Japanese person's? Because they're very straight, thick hair, don't they?
I've never really thought about that until I went back to the UK once, and I got a haircut there. Mm. And the woman who was doing my hair, she said, "Where have you got this done? It's really odd." And I said, "Oh, you know, I live in Japan. My friend did it." And she was like, "Okay." And it seemed like there is a different technique. They have a very different style in Japan. I don't know what it is. I think they don't cut they don't do short back and sides the same way we do in the UK or in the West or something. I'm not really sure, but she was definitely perplexed by it, which was quite interesting. It never even dawned on me that it would be different. But
the haircut that's very popular is like a hard. What do you call it? What do you do when you comb your hair onto one side? I realise it's a very basic
parting.
Thing. A parting.
Comb over.
Like a hard parting, where basically it's like an Italian thing where...
A parting.
It used to be all combed back with really severe cuts at the side. And that was the thing for about 5 years. And I think that's something
they
used to call...
Is that what your hair looks like?
Yeah, that's pretty much mine. I've not really been able to get rid of it. To be honest, I had a shaved head.
You have very
head.
Stylistic hair.
I had very a very, well I, hair. I had a completely shaved head. I had a completely bald head during all of my 20s. And I got to about 29, 30, and a mutual friend, the wife of the TV presenter, Richard Bacon, said, "Well, Pete, you shaved your head because you went bald, didn't you?" And I went, "No." Is that what people think? Is that what people think? They think I'm bald. And so I started growing some really terrible hair. So I've not been able to sort of get away. I had a Jedward for a bit, which is very spiky, stupid hair. That took a lot of hairspray, I tell you what. And now I've got what can only be described as, I think, that it's not popular. It's basically Kim Jong-un's haircut. Something they used to call it. It's like an old Chinese pirate's haircut.
What do you say when you go into the hairdressers? You just say,
undercut.
Do the Kim Jong-un haircut.
Give me an undercut. Give me an undercut and let me get out of here. I got this one that's like a Turkish. Turkish barbers are always usually the best because they give you like a shoulder massage and they pull on your fingers and they set fire to your ear hair. Oh, it's incredible.
Wow.
They give you a hot towel.
Luxurious life you
Beautiful.
Mean. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen Pete Donaldson's hair, do Google him. There are some lovely photos of him. When I first met you, I was very taken aback by how stylish you were in your clothes and your hair. You look exactly how I imagined a radio DJ / entertainer / person to look like.
The guild fell off that lily pretty quickly, I'd imagine.
I remember, actually, the first time I met you, I didn't tell you this, I wanted to make a good impression.
Mm.
I was wearing some scruffy T-shirt. The day I met Pete Donaldson, I was in London with Natsuki, making Natsuki the movie, and Pete just messaged me an email saying, "Hi, Chris, I watched your videos."
Don't sound like that.
"And it would be great to interview you." And I was like, "Oh, okay, don't know who that is, but that sounds fun, let's go." Because we were just a few blocks away from the Absolute Radio Station studio.
That's why I said it.
Have it. And I was wearing some crappy T-shirt, looking really scruffy. And I remember going into Uniqlo or somewhere nearby and buying a shirt. and putting it over my T-shirt just to meet you, because I thought, well, I want to look good. I don't want to look like crap when I meet this famous, incredible DJ.
Let's make that very clear that he doesn't do that anymore. The magic's gone out of our relationship. It's terrible.
Completely.
Your dinner's in the dog.
But if you watch Statsky the movie, you can see the T-shirt combo that I got. And there you go. A nice little bit of trivia behind the scenes information there.
Lovely.
Got an email from Kyle Schmidt. He says, "Hey guys, my name's Kyle and I live in Greenville in North Carolina.
Ooh.
I listen to your podcast after a long day of being a 911 operator.
Good God.
It helps me distress. But let me get to the questions. For Chris, me and my buddy are planning on coming to Japan in 2020 around Christmas time. Can you describe to us what it's like around that time? And for Pete, I heard you liked Persona 5. I do as well, so please give me your overall opinion on it. Keep up the amazing work, guys. Huge fan, Kyle." First off, Pete, what is Persona 5? I have no idea. I'm assuming it's a video game.
It's a video game, and it's the fifth one of a video game. To be honest, I've not played that much of it. I just didn't get on with it, and I had other games in the on the go at the time. It's a JRPG, but it's modern and it's about school kids and it's set in Shibuya, I believe. And I think he's an orphan or something and he's looked after by his granddad or a relation in Shibuya, a ramen shop. And that's about as far as I got, to be honest. There's two sides to it. There's like the spooky kind of netherworld, the underworld, that they all travel around in. And then there's, modern day Shibuya. It's a fascinating, I do like,
sounds quite good.
It's really good. It's a big, it's up there with one of their bigger franchises. It's up there with like your Final Fantasies and your Yakuza's in Japan, I believe. I think Persona's a pretty big,
game.
PS4, I think it's been on all. Yeah, I think it's been on all of them, but at some point, because obviously it's the fifth one, probably going right back to the PS2. To be honest, might be right of the mark
And when I make the investment and get a PlayStation 4, which I may well do before the year's out, after the cycle, I think I'm going to just sit in a room for like a month and do nothing, which would be the perfect time to get a PlayStation 4.
It'll end up on the Switch, no doubt.
Yes, like everything good. As for Christmas in Japan. How to describe it? It feels like Christmas, but something's wrong is the best way to describe it. You have like the music playing. They have like Last Christmas playing in the shops. There's Christmas trees and decoration everywhere. And then Christmas Day comes around and there's nothing. It's just rubbish. Like, I worked on Christmas Day and I've talked about it loads because it's a horrible memory. My first Christmas in Japan. Mm. Just being at work alone, eating some crappy bento and then falling over in some snow. And then... the day after Christmas Day, December 26th, you wake up and all the decorations, the Christmas trees, the music is gone. It's all gone. It's just completely gone. It's like they make an aggressive effort in Japan to just finish Christmas the day after it's happened. And it always depresses me because for me, Christmas is like a month-long thing that ends early January. You know, it's a whole season.
Yeah.
And that feeling in Japan of nothing actually happening on Christmas Day and then it just being over straight after, it just makes Christmas in Japan feel very superficial and commercialized. It's not great. I mean, I do like the fact they acknowledge Christmas as a thing. That's nice because it's my favorite time of year back home anyway. Mm. And it kind of helps get over that. But on the other hand, it's very commercialized and it feels like what Christmas might be going towards in the West, where there's no historic component or nothing, just selling presents and buying and selling stuff.
Mm. It's like Halloween, I think, in kind of in Japan, where Halloween, and then the next day, like I think it's on a Wednesday Christmas. This year, everyone goes absolutely crazy, and then Thursday they replace all of the Halloween stuff with Christmas stuff. I think that's the case.
I mean, there's Halloween stuff on sale for the last month already in a lot of shops, like early September. They love Halloween here. I'd say in many ways Halloween's bigger than Christmas, and Halloween in Japan is actually quite fun. They do have lots of great parties in places like Tokyo and Osaka. Pete loves it. That's why Pete comes
at all.
It's the reason he's coming this time. He wasn't even coming for the cycle. He was coming for Halloween.
You invented the cycle mid me planning the trip.
Love it, Pete. And so if Pete Donaldson travels the other side of the world every year to come and experience it, it must be quite good.
Yeah, so try Halloween.
Halloween is better than Christmas.
Definitely.
Come then instead, Kyle. Come then instead. But yeah, even if you do come in Christmas, I'm sure you'll have a great time.
Mm.
What else we got?
We've got an email from Lucas from Denmark.
Lucas
from the Kingdom of Denmark here, he says. Very grand. I'm currently spending my gap year working in a warehouse trying to scrape up some money before adventuring Japan next year. Loving the podcast. I listen to it every Thursday, which makes the tedious labour of packaging 4 million computer chips a little more bearable. Wow.
4 million computer chips.
That's a lot, isn't it?
I
was wondering.
What I picture the people of Denmark to do.
I was wondering, since I'm also considering living in Japan in the future, how do people greet each other? I know that a lot of Japanese people have a pretty hard time with physical contact. In Denmark, though, hugging is a very big part of the culture when greeting people, and I'm curious as to how that will be perceived in the land of four seasons. So my question is, how would you normally greet a stranger in Japan, for example a new boss? Would it be with a handshake or just a bow? Would you ever hug Natsuki or Risotto? You've really got to stop calling him Risotto. It's getting the point.
It's getting to a silly point.
When seeing them for the first time in a while, I would love to know. Keep up the great work. Hugh too, Lucas from Denmark. So do you ever hug people? I've hugged people in the past and it's always a bit, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that, because they just don't do hugs quite so much, do they?
Well, you hugged me and I, you know, I felt a bit uncomfortable.
Love
at the time.
It. But love
I
a hug.
Went along with it. Yeah, in Japan, I wouldn't hug anyone, really. I think I probably hugged Natsuki once, like a goodbye hug, when I left Sakata, when I moved away. But yeah, I mean, if you're meeting a boss, typically it'd be a bow. I do find a lot of Japanese, when it comes to business in Japan, if you are a foreigner, a lot of people will shake your hand.
Yeah.
And you just go along with it, right? Mm. Because they like it. They think it's cool to shake hands with a foreigner. Because that's what we do in the West.
Mm.
But typically I would bow. I would always just bow and see what happens. If they put out their hand to me, I shake it. Otherwise, I just bow. And that's the way to do it. Even friends in Japan, they just bow. And they greet each other by saying something like, Hisashiburi. Do you know that phrase, Pete?
Hisashiburi. No.
Hisashiburi. It's means long time no see. If you've watched Natsuki the movie, there's a scene where Natsuki goes into a bar to meet his friend, the really awesome guy, Tera-chan, who's got like a bar themed like a British, like the UK. Do you remember that bit?
Yes, I do. And then Natsuki goes on to perform a rather underwhelming trick with a chupa chupa.
He does perform an incredible trick with a chupa chups. But he goes in, and when he opens the door, Tera-chan says to him, you know, he says, oh, Hisashiburi, long time no see, good to see you, long time no see. That's the most common greeting amongst friends informally, I would say.
Mm.
If you haven't seen someone for a few months or something, you'd say, oh, Hisashiburi.
Ah.
That's the way to do it. That's the best way. Sometimes they say, you know, Genki, but given that it's a phrase that we learn a lot when we first start learning Japanese, oh, genki desu ka?
Yeah.
You find it's not used as much as you'd think in Japan.
No, I hear daijoubu a lot more.
Daijoubu, yeah, daijoubu is the most, like, used word ever, which means okay or I'm okay.
Mm.
Yeah, people don't use genki. They don't even say genki desu ka that often. It feels a bit odd in Japan, I find. Like, most people don't do it. The reason they teach it, I think, is because it's just easiest for us, right? When we see someone, like in the UK, the first thing you'd say is like, how you doing? How you doing, right? What's going on?
Yeah.
Whereas in Japan, I find they don't do that as much. They would just say Hisashiburi. So, yeah, I think they just teach Genki desu ka, so it makes us feel more, it just helps us get into the culture maybe or something.
It's quite a fun
English
word, isn't
greeting.
It? Genki. It's quite a fun, memorable word because it's unlike a lot of other words. It's got a real bounce to it. Genki!
It does. Genki. It's just nice. Nice bouncy word.
Mm.
And I mean, another good phrase actually that we learn early when studying Japanese, if you go through the first few phrases that you learn in Japanese, one of them is doitashimashite, which means you're welcome, right?
Mm.
You know, you're welcome. But we never ever use that here. I've never really hear it.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I think I learned, and I've just forgotten. I can when you said doitashimashite, I knew exactly what you meant, because sometimes when I hear you say speak Japanese, I'm like, yeah, no, I haven't got the first clue what that is. But doitashimashite, I do remember learning that, but I don't think I've ever used it once.
Well, like, it means you're welcome, right? And it's kind of the way it's translated in English, it's, you know, you're welcome. So if you say thanks for something, you say, oh, thanks, Chris. I'll go, oh, you're welcome, Pete.
Mm.
But they don't really do that in Japan. They would just say, oh, yeah, yeah. No, 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 not at all, right? You'd just say no. if someone's thanking you for something, you don't go, "You're welcome." You just go, "Oh, no, no, not at all," in Japanese. So in that regard, you never really hear "you're welcome." You don't hear doitashimashite. So I don't know why they teach it that much, really. You're better off just explaining how Japanese actually works. And that's one of the most interesting things. When I was studying Japanese, I did it in Japan, so I could see the things that didn't really work or things that aren't actually used. And when you're going through a Japanese textbook early on, the early stuff you learn, beginner stuff, a lot of the phrases are a bit off. They aren't really used in Japan. And I think that's a really interesting topic that I should probably cover at some point. I'll do my research a bit more. But that's just a taster of what's to come one day when we actually make that podcast.
Or video, I guess.
Or video, yeah, that'd be better. We got an email from Katrina from Orlando. She says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I work at a roller coaster in a popular amusement park in America."
Wow.
Given that it's Orlando,
there's only a few, isn't there?
What, Disney?
Could be.
What is there? There was that one in Tampa as well. Anyway, today we had some technical issues and the ride was closed. And I tried explaining this to a young woman when she came up to the entrance, but she just looked confused and kept saying, "Only Japanese." How would I say something like "closed" or "broken" in Japanese? And have you guys had any interesting experiences in Japanese theme parks? Ooh. How do they compare to theme parks where you're from? Katrina from Orlando. That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, I wouldn't, rather than teach you some sort of Japanese phrase, I would just say, I would just take out a map of the theme park, point at the ride, and then, do you know when you go down a water slide and you sort of cross your arms in front of you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when you're going down a chute or something. Mm. Just do that, because in Japan, that if you cross your arms in that way, to form an X, it just kind of means no. It means no. So I just point at the ride on the map and just do that and be like, no, no. And that's the best way, rather than trying to speak some Japanese quickly and awkwardly, which might be difficult. So that's the best option.
Perfect.
Yeah. In terms of theme parks, I actually went to a Japanese theme park the other day. Nasu Highland Park in Tochigi Prefecture. It's a really big, really decent theme park on the side of a mountain. I went there and there were 50 people there in a theme park on the scale of like a pretty decent sized theme park. And I was able to go on roller coasters four times in a row just because nobody goes there on a weekday.
I love
and that
a theme
was awesome.
Park.
So that's my experience of a Japanese theme park. They're all really busy except Nasu Highland Park. So I recommend going there. If you can get there, it's a bit out of the way. But yeah, theme parks in Japan, generally, they're so busy that I don't enjoy going to them. I really enjoy Fuji Q Highland Park, which we featured in a recent video where I cycled around a lake with my friend Sharla. We went there, and that's my favourite theme park in Japan, hands down. The rides are amazing.
He forced Sharla into getting on the ride, even though she didn't want to.
That was brilliant.
He didn't like the roller coaster.
I enjoyed that so much. Even I was scared that roller coaster once it was going. I was filming it. I was trying to film it on a GoPro, film her reaction. And I was so busy fumbling with the GoPro, I didn't even realise I was on a roller coaster climbing up like 100 metres about to drop off. And then I sort of looked up from the GoPro. I was like, oh, shit, we're about to go down.
Did you tip the GoPro to your hands at any point?
No, I was trying to cling on to it. I was very stupid. I had it in my hand. And I didn't know whether or not I could film the ride because I'd heard you couldn't, but there was nothing saying you couldn't.
You couldn't,
so I figured I'd just film our reactions instead to get around that.
Yeah.
And get some people with cameras filming us on the roller coaster. But it was a really amazing ride. That's called Fujiyama. It used to be the tallest roller coaster on the planet. Now I think it's the sixth tallest, but it's so bloody high and it's so fun. And do you like roller coasters, Pete?
Yeah, I really do. I think they're brilliant. I don't go to enough of them.
Go there one day when you come to Japan and it's not winter. Go there. You can like hop on a bus from Shinjuku station and off you go.
Yeah,
you'll love
perfect.
It
perfect.
Best theme park ever.
Perfect.
What else we got?
We've got an email from Luca. Hello, Luca. Keep on rocking, he ends the email with, which I'm enjoying. Hello, Chris and Pete. Hope you're doing well. I am Luca from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I listen to the podcast every week in my car while going to the college or work. There's always traffic, so I'm very thankful to have something fun to listen to. I'm going to be living in Tokyo as an abroad student next semester, and I have two questions regarding Japanese festivals. First is, if any of you guys have ever been to the Sapporo Winter Festival, and if yes, what did you guys think of it? Is it worth going? And the second, if you guys have got any recommendations of festivals in the spring season, there are so many festivals that I can't decide which ones I should go to. Ooh. I've done a lot of festivals.
What I'll say is, I know. Have you been to any festivals?
No, I was only in Sapporo for a couple of days, and I climbed that little mountain next to it.
Ah, yeah.
And that was it. That's all I did, really. Played a bit of baseball in the baseball cages, the batting cages, and then went home.
Sounds like my ideal holiday.
Yeah.
I know Sapporo Winter Festival is supposed to be amazing. Everyone that I know who's been to it has always talked about how brilliant it was, and the photos, videos of it look incredible. So definitely go there. I would go if I could, or I don't know why I don't. I just never bother. But every town, like so many towns across Japan, have their festival on in spring. Like the town I used to live in, Sakata, has a cool festival. There's nothing particularly special, but it's just a nice atmosphere. You have hundreds of stalls doing the same things, like karaage chicken, and my personal favourite, choco banana.
Ooh.
Which is just a banana covered in chocolate and sprinkles.
There's money in the banana stand.
Did you just go, or?
No, I went, ooh, bananas.
Ah, good. I thought you might be disgusted by the concept of a chocolate banana. Well, it's so delightful.
I've got
it's
nothing against delightful. That.
Yeah. And there's also... No, actually, I don't know anymore. That's it. But there are some great festivals dotted throughout the year. But honestly, I'll just go on the events page, type it in, see what you can find. But there's certainly no shortage in the spring season. There's so many great festivals to enjoy. But go to the Winter Festival, Luca, and enjoy yourself. Have fun. Got an email from Friedrich who says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. First of all, sorry about the length of this email.
It's all right.
I'm an Austrian guy, currently wrapping up my work in Boston, where I've been staying for the past 2 months. Love the podcast and the YouTube channel. Both have helped me to kill time. With the exception of the cockroach in the Love Hotel story, and mentioning that there are many insects in Okinawa, you've never really covered this topic. I've heard several times that there are many insects in Japan, especially those huge centipedes. Is this true for the whole of Japan, or is the north different to the south? I might have the possibility of working or moving in Japan in the future, and I'm considering it, but I honestly don't think I can live in a place where those centipedes are and those other freaks of nature can find my way into my room." Best, all the best, Friedrich. That's a great reason not to come to Japan. Insects. To be fair, I did say in a recent video I wouldn't go to Australia because of the spiders, so it's a legitimate reason in my eyes. But that said, I think in the north, or just Tokyo or the north, there's not that many insects. I did open my door the other day, though, and find a dead hornet, which are terrifying. Like, if you imagine
so
a bee
big.
And then times that bee by five, it's absolutely giant, and they have the very characteristic angry-looking face. They're quite beautiful. They're yellow and black stripes, and they look beautiful, but they're absolutely dangerous as hell. If they sting you, you have to get to the hospital straight away. A lot of people die every year by being stung by them.
That's the only thing
I worry about. Yeah. Also saw a snake as well yesterday whilst walking down by the river. A snake just sort of slithered right in front of me about 2 meters in front of me, which was a little bit unnerving, but also quite cool because I never see snakes in the UK, so that was cool. But yeah, I don't think insects are too much of an issue, other than summer when you have those bloody annoying loud cicadas which don't shut the hell up for like 3 months.
They're in their final throes, aren't they? They spend all of their time underground, and then for like 1 week they come up, have sex, and then die. Very sad.
Sounds like an ideal lifestyle. They just fly into your face. I don't know what it is about them. It's like their radar's off or something. They just sort of fly out of trees and just smack you in the head. And it's happened to me numerous times the last few, like every year it happens at least 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, you don't see them in rooms really. They never really sort of come into the room. Spiders and stuff. Yeah, I don't think it's not a particularly insecty place. Have you got like places like Malaysia or Thailand? I think there, or Indonesia. I think there's the South Asian kind of countries. I think there's a lot more of that around.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually had that many unpleasant experiences. I don't like insects either, Friedrich, so don't be too alarmed. It hasn't been much of an issue for me. There are lots of spiders outside, but I never really see them on the inside. And I know now that I've said that, they're going to be everywhere. I did have an issue a few months ago where I went into the lift, the doors closed, and I looked down, and there was this giant cockroach, and it just started following me around the lift. And I live 4 stories up. And I was just doing circles in this lift while this cockroach followed me around. I don't know why they do it. I don't know what it hoped to do. Was it trying to attack me? Did it just want to hug or something?
Be your
I
friend.
Don't know. But it was terrifying.
Wanted to shake your hand.
Yeah. He knew I was a YouTuber.
You'll be fine, Friedrich.
Yeah, you'll be fine. All the best, Friedrich. Good luck.
Yeah.
I got one from Zach. Hey, Chris and Pete. My name's Zach. I live in England. Nice one. I love listening to your podcasts on the long trek to school. Kind of saves me a little. And the videos are amazing. Keep up the great work. I had a question. What would you say is the hardest thing about teaching English in Japan? Because I'm planning on doing that, and I want to prepare myself as best as I can. All the best, Zach. The hardest thing about teaching English in Japan, Zach, is a lot of people don't really care about English. They don't see why it's important. They throw wave after wave of grammar at students, but they don't spend much time telling students about why English is of value and how it's not just some language. It's actually just a tool, you know, a tool that can make your life a lot more fulfilling and exciting and give you lots of opportunities to travel and listen to the Abroad in Japan podcast, above all. Yeah, that's the most annoying thing. So if you do become a teacher, just tell students why English is good and make them want to learn, because that's the biggest problem I've found. Just a lack of motivation or caring about English or seeing why English was important. Although that might be because I lived in the countryside, so they don't really need it there anyway. But
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Fucking horrible. Oh.
Wow. We got an email from Ethan from North Carolina. You're going to have to take this one, though, Chris, because it starts saying, please read this in your best American accent for maximum authenticity. And obviously, you're the one with the American accent that's very good, so...
I don't know if I'm the right frame of mind to pull off an American accent today.
I'll try it.
Okay. Ready? Okay, I haven't done it in a while, so if it's crap, forgive me. And if it does go crap halfway through, I'll abandon it. Firstly, thanks for doing this podcast. I've been binging all the episodes and listening to them every single day at work for 9 hours, and I'm finally caught up. I was wondering about the religious state of Japan and how many protests... And oh, shit. Oh, my God, I've messed it up. And how many profess Shintoism or Buddhism. But you mentioned in one of your videos with Ryotaro that the Japanese people are actually mostly atheistic. What has been your experience? Atheistic, is that a word? I don't know. What has been... I'm losing it. Oh, shit. What has been your experience with such a unique culture that ritualistically and traditionally is religious, but the majority is truly non-religious? This is going horribly wrong.
You kind of forget, you kind of forget that the American accent is actually... You do have to contort your mouth. Like, you really have to kind of lean into it like that.
What's going wrong? I mean, yeah, okay, I'll try carrying on. Do you think there may be interest in religion that is disencouraged by Japanese culture? Thanks, Ethan from North. Can never say
North.
North Carolina.
Carolina.
That's a difficult one. difficult question, difficult words. Trying to say... words like ritualistically and traditionally is religious in an American accent. And disencouraged. That's my challenge for the day.
They've given you a right stick.
I know I could do a better American accent than that. I should have read this question in advance and practiced it so I can blow everyone away. That was just a horrible voice. That's going to scar lots of listeners. But anyway, on to the question. Ethan, what's the question? What's the experience being with such unique culture? Basically, I found that everyone in Japan is more or less an atheist, and the aspects of Buddhism and Shintoism are more just rituals, as you say. They're basically just rituals, rather than having some sort of religious belief component, some sort of belief in something in the afterlife. It's more like just a ritual. But then they also do believe in ancestors and paying respects to ancestors. Whether they believe in an afterlife, I'm not sure. When I speak to Ryotaro about it, he said, like, in a video we made back in, I think, March, he said he pays respects to his ancestors, but he doesn't really believe in anything after he died. He's by all accounts, an atheist.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated one, isn't it? You have rituals, but in a sense, why are you doing those rituals if you don't believe in them?
Mm.
I think that sums up Japanese culture very well. You know, you find people don't question the things they're doing. They do these rituals, they do these things, but they don't question why they do them.
Yeah, it's not for any sort of organized religious reason. It's not, you know, there's ritualism, and it's a cultural ritualism rather than a religious one, or certainly an organized religion anyway.
Mm, mm. Yeah, it's an interesting
aspect. Which I quite like.
Aspect,
I think I like that.
I think, yeah, it's nice. You know, you don't get into religious debates with everyone.
Mm.
There's no religious debates to be had, which is always nice. Everyone just goes along with it. And, yeah, religion doesn't really get in the way of things here. But I think it's people just do it more for good fortune, you know. Yeah, honestly, it's nice. I like it. But I find religion doesn't get in the way of many people's lives here. It doesn't factor in generally, apart from certain times of year, like Obon Festival in August, and in the New Year, most people go to a shrine or a temple to pray. But yeah, that's it. So it's nice. It's cool. Don't think I can add anything else to that.
No,
I've still got the sound of my own voice ringing in my ears of my butchered American accent. I'll have to make up for it. In a future podcast, I'll have to actually
take a good running jump and choose an email that doesn't have so many complex words in it.
Ritualistically and traditionally religious culture. Yeah. It's a difficult one. Send your questions in, ladies and gentlemen, to the abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Inbox. We'll be back same time next Wednesday. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, thanks for joining us. Have yourself a great week, and we'll see you then. Take care, everyone. Bye for now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.